everybody. Welcome back to Pack Your Mics, the Top Chef podcast from the creators of Read It and Weep. We have a great show for you today. So much to talk about. Season 12, Episode 3. I'm Alex Falcone here in Portland with Megan. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Alex.
Joining us in Brooklyn are Tanya and Chris.
Hey.
Hello.
And in the Bay Area, it's Ezra and Sarah and Baby.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
We have so much to talk about today. A lot of fun things, some backstories, but let's just jump right into the quick fire. In honor of Boston, it was time for the tea party, as we predicted. Cook a dish with your assigned tea. What do you guys think? What do you guys think of the high stakes quick fire that came back? Let's start there. What do you guys think about having other high stakes quick fire?
It's
a couple of things came back at the same time.
Let's start in the Bay Area.
The high stakes feels kind of like a misnomer here. It's like half high stakes.
Well, it's like possibly high stakes.
Yeah, right. It's you like you may have already been
high stakes
kind of thing. It's like you weren't actually, but you know.
But it came close.
It came close.
It's like getting grazed by a bullet.
Yeah, exactly.
Or it's sort of like having to prove it in playing a game of horse.
Or getting grazed by a bullet, but you can like put someone else in front of the bullet instead.
They won't die either way.
Sort of.
Right.
It's like you select
they're wearing a bulletproof vest.
Yeah, you select one person who you know you're better at dodging bullets than.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, guys, I remember like in Las Vegas when it was high stakes quick fire, it was like you win, you get $5,000.
Right.
You lose, you're out.
Yeah.
And it was very kind of simple. What do you guys think about this new format where if you lose the quick fire, you have to basically prove that you deserve to be there by beating somebody else. But if you beat them, everybody still stays.
It's like a cornucopia.
Let's start with Megan about this, actually. Go ahead,
I
Megan.
Love it. I hated the high stakes quick fires where
just
all of a sudden someone had to leave. I just felt like it was super unfair, and I didn't feel good about it. And I really like this this idea that someone could go home, but you have a chance to save yourself. And it makes it just seem a little bit more fair, because if someone really does lose two of those in a row, then it just seems a little bit more fair, like they had more of a shot.
One went home for a sandwich. You went home for a sandwich and another appetizer.
Yeah.
And something else you cooked in a hurry.
Yeah. I didn't like this idea that someone was definitely going to go home in the quick fire.
Caleb seems to agree.
I really feel like he's
chiming in.
I think it's brilliant. Yeah.
He has very,
I'm pretty
very,
sure that's what Caleb's is saying.
Big opinions.
Yeah. Strong, garbly opinions.
So, Chris, the way you're asking that question implies that you don't like it. Brooklyn, what do you guys think about this rule?
I think it's a cornucopia of animosity. That's the thing that makes me uncomfortable about it.
Ooh.
Is that like,
so seasonal.
Yeah. Band name.
No, because I feel like it's like everything was fine. You didn't cook very well in this quickfire, and then suddenly you get to call someone else out and be like, "You're not very good at cooking at all." Now maybe you go home. I don't know. Like it's just
I do like just putting someone out there like angriest and most vulnerable and giving them a chance to lash out at someone else.
Like, that's the thing I don't care for. Like I feel like it should be you know what? If they rolled out a knife block that had everyone else in it and you chose at random and then you had to or if there was like a wheel of other chefs, but I hate this. Like, you know, I really think this person is terrible at cooking, so why don't I just fight them? Like,
I agree with you that that's an awkward moment, but it does. The thing is, that person, although insulted, has nothing at stake.
Yeah, exactly.
They can't go home. If they lose, they're just, in this case today, it's just that Katie, when she lost, failed to eliminate Aaron, and so everyone hates her for it. But that was like the worst that happened.
It's hard to feel anything but like a little worried about Katie.
She just doesn't seem like a chef in the chef sense, you know? Like she's a good cook sometimes, but
She's a good cook sometimes.
No, she did a good job on elimination. She did a good job on the final thing.
Right, but she didn't know she did.
She didn't realize she did a good job. It's true.
She couldn't tell the difference.
Worst thing ever, and they loved the crap out of it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think we'll talk more about Katie here in a second, but do you guys think then, since you do think she's only an okay chef, do you think Aaron made the right call in picking Katie over his nemesis Blondie?
I guess, is there anyone else you would have picked?
I mean, obviously I wanted to see him cook off against Blondie. I thought that was a brilliant storyline they had set up, and I was so excited about it. And it was real shocking that he didn't.
Yeah, although I'm not sure.
Understandable, also.
Isn't that shocking?
I don't think he's confident he could beat Carrie Ann.
Yeah,
yeah, that's the thing.
He said he could cook her under the table. This was a chance. Well, there was a table. There was cooking. They were right there.
I think part of his backstory was explaining that sometimes he gets like rage blackout sass mouth and like doesn't realize that he like is saying things, and then in retrospect is like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said all that stuff. So I feel like in the sane moment of like, I could go home for this, he chose more wisely than just like, I'll just get this one random lady. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll cook her under the table later.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was probably the right call. And I admired that even in that moment of pure anger, he just decided not to cook against his nemesis and finish that storyline. He rather wanted to stay around.
He wanted to start a new
grudge. I wish
grudge.
More things would end this way, where it's like, there's a final countdown, and like it's going up against the villain, and there's like, actually, no, wait, I'll just beat up on a henchman first.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he did choose to start a new grudge, and somebody who now also hates him.
That's where the thing.
It's not just that he doesn't like Katie and doesn't like Katsuji for talking all the time, but now he didn't like Carrie Ann. Now he doesn't like Katie because he has a grudge against culinary school as an institution.
Right. And then on top of that, I feel like it also, like, the animosity just keeps coming because now everyone has, like, fantasized about him getting sent home.
Yeah.
And, like, and then he didn't. So now they're all just like, oh, why didn't he get sent home?
Yeah,
like,
Gregory's
he's got to
like,
go.
Everyone is secretly hoping that Katie wins.
Also, Gregory come hang out in a treehouse with me because he's
the cutest. I like Gregory too. And that was actually, I thought, a pretty good, like, as far as actually saying on camera that you don't like a guy, he did it pretty nicely.
It's a pretty nice way to do it.
He did it in a way that made me wish he was the secret narrator for all of Top Chef. He just, like, cut to Gregory, like, in a corner being like, also, this.
Gregory from Portland winning everything. I wanted to say though really quick about this move where you have to pick someone to fight against. It's in other shows. I know they do it in Last Comic Standing, and in Last Comic you have to say I am funnier than blank. They tell you have to do it in that formula. But I have seen people in the history of the show have done it without being a jerk. It is possible to say. And they make not only the one person, they make everybody vote. So every single person has to say that they're funnier than someone else on the show, which is awkward making. But some people are like, look, I want to play against the best. If I can't beat you now, I'm not going to be able to beat you in the long run. So I'm voting for this person.
I like that a lot.
That's respectful.
And if you'd said with Blondie, even if you'd said, look, I'm not saying I'm definitely better than you, but you know we didn't get along. We both tanked that team, so I think we should fight it out right now. Like there are a lot of ways you can say that in that moment. Obviously, you just lost a quickfire and are about to go home, and you're not thinking straight. But it is possible in that formula to not be a jerk. Obviously, Aaron is not going to.
But your antagonist is always optional.
Right.
Go ahead, Ez.
But okay.
No, just douchebagginess is pretty much always optional in this. Like, you could find a way to be not a dickbag.
Yeah, optional, but encouraged? I don't know. Chris, what were you going
to
say?
Well, I think what you're forgetting is that Aaron doesn't know how not to be a jerk and a douchebag. Mm. And so he's never going to do that.
Right, totally. You know, so it just gives him another opportunity to be a douche.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Melissa would be fine at that, you know? Or Gregory or somebody who seems nice.
This raises the inevitable question that Megan brought up earlier, which is we learned a little bit more backstory for Douche Hat in that he had a troubled childhood. Well, Megan, we'll start with you. Do you feel less bad about him? Do you hate him less now that you know that he had a bad childhood?
Well, I understand him more. I think that it seems like it was sort of interesting what he said where he sort of acknowledged that he was a jerk. But he said like underneath that, I sort of understand that I'm working through it. He doesn't really seem like he's trying not to be a jerk, but maybe he is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I completely agree that like him copping to working through it was cool, but I was really uncomfortable that he was working through it with Top Chef. That was the part that I was like, I don't like that. Don't use this for that. You need to do that somewhere else, not on camera.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a murderer, but I'm trying to work through it.
With Real Housewives.
How old is he? He just seems really immature, like he's like 22 or something.
Well, but he grew up at a very young age.
Yeah. Which is actually a more astute thing to say than it sounds like. It sounds like a contradiction. But
No, I think I understand what he meant, but it was a funny thing. Before we move on to the elimination, really quick, Chris, you are not eliminated. Just thought you should know that.
I did want to say one more thing about tragic backstories, if that's okay.
Yeah, please go for it.
I feel like honestly, Nicholas could have been put up for adoption by wolves who were supposed to raise him, and I still would not feel any different about him as a chef in the kitchen. Like,
So the wolves were supposed to raise him and didn't?
Yeah, he was real bad about wolves now.
Like, wow. He'd been abandoned to be raised by wolves, and the wolves were like, oh, no, not even going to do this.
Talking about Nicholas Almy, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I feel like if you're a jerk of an adult working as a chef, that's just what you're doing. Like, and I don't, there's not any amount of like excuses about like sadness in your past that are going to make me forgive you for being a jerk to other humans now.
Yeah. I think that's totally just, fair. He said I grew up in a broken home, I felt like, yeah, well, now I understand more of it, but I still wish you weren't a jerk.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah. And it's even weirder to use that against people. I don't know. I just feel like it's a weird card to play. Like, there's any number of excuses.
Thing, though. From the editing side, it's kind of interesting because we haven't usually, anytime someone's getting like a villain edit, they haven't usually tried to like have like a layered character, you know?
That's a good point.
That's a great point. They wanted him to be a complicated villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like villains on this show. I prefer a show where everyone gets along and cooks great, which I'm sure is not the feeling in Bravo.
It's called Top Chef Masters.
Except for Masters.
Yeah, except for Masters. Yeah.
That show is called Top Chef Masters.
Yeah, but I would enjoy if they were trying to make him at least more complicated. I think that is solid.
I really thought that they were trying to say he was going home, and I got really excited when they were trying to make him a little bit more likable. I was like, yeah, he's not more likable, but I really like what you're doing here because I think I know where this is going.
I see what you're doing, Bravo.
I had to guess the edit with magical elves. Like,
it's fun.
It's a game. Like, it should be a drinking game. Should be if any of us drank that much.
It could also be a prediction game since we're so good at predictions. I enjoy that thing where we think he's going home, and I really enjoyed the whole part of him screwing up because he did like 4 mess ups in a row on that quickfire, and I was just loving that storyline so much. And then he picked Katie, and it was like record scratch. And now it's a whole different world. And then he made a weird, like, shrimp noodle, and I didn't like that. I like handmade pasta over his, like, mushed shrimp.
Yeah, but if her pasta didn't have salt and not enough sauce, at the end of the day, it's...
Yeah.
Well, and then, okay, so were there other people that, like, if Carrie Ann was not going to be the one, like, and Katie also was not satisfying, was there someone else he could have chosen that would have been exciting to see him cook against?
I would have loved if he had chosen Gregory, and... Because I like that confidence. It probably means he goes home, but I like the idea of saying, if I can't beat the best today, I can't beat him in the end of the show.
Yeah, yeah. Like the idea of like picking the top of the pile, basically.
Yeah.
I would have, just for my own knowledge of the people on the show, I would have been into him picking Rebecca, just because I have no idea who she is.
Yeah.
So we could meet her finally.
Yeah, so we could finally meet and understand her.
They did show her for a second, and they were like, something, something, Rebecca. And Ez and I both turned to each other, and we were like, oh, Rebecca.
She's a ghost.
We had that same moment.
Yeah, Megan and I had a similar moment. We were like, wait, how long have you been on the show?
Exactly. There's always someone.
But I will say, just jumping ahead for a second, Tanya, that from your prediction from last week, that we will find out who Rebecca is this week. Nope.
Nope. That didn't go great.
That elude us. A bit more, though.
She did some more talking, but I still feel like she's just unmolded clay at this point.
Yeah, it feels like this is Lost, I guess, where it's like she's the smoke monster. We won't find out until like season like 3 or 4, if that, you know?
Yeah.
What, until she kills somebody?
Yep. Yep, that's classic Top Chef.
Be a good reason to challenge someone. It's like, well, Rebecca, I think, killed someone, so I'd like to beat her and get her out of this competition.
And she goes,
if I can't beat her... All right, let's jump into the elimination now, you guys, where they had to use baseball stadium snacks to cook a dish and eat it in Fenway Park. Let's start here. Why do people still think they can braise on this show?
Hour in a ballpark kitchen?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Let's rattle off the things that when people are like, let's use this, you immediately get uncomfortable. For me, it's always sous vide. Always.
It's always what?
Sous vide, like whenever someone's like, oh, don't worry, I've got this.
Whenever
dunk
somebody
this
says,
in, like, bath
I'll have
water
to wait until tomorrow to see if this dessert's set properly.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And that almost never works.
It doesn't. Also, normally when somebody turns a, like a, a thick pudding into a thin pudding or whatever that is when you go, like, when she did creme brulee into, I don't know, what did she even call it?
It's called thinning.
What, Chris?
Oh, I think that's called thinning. Where you thinning out.
Chris, you have to go home. Sorry.
It turns out this
was not claim to be food experts, just food TV.
Moose.
The high-stakes comic.
No, but she turned it into a moose. Didn't she turn it into a moose?
That's it. When you turn something into a moose, that almost never works out right, but she nailed it. It was like not a moose, and then it's a moose, and it was good, and that's rare.
Usually it's a problem because, like, you can make mousses that are trying to be mousses and don't turn out right. And,
yeah, like, that's
you can accidentally make a mousse, apparently, and it'd be great.
Yeah, I was impressed. Yeah. What else do you guys get nervous when somebody says it during the prep?
I've never tried this ingredient before.
Yeah. You've never cooked with these fish cheeks.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen this.
They didn't have, so I just substituted.
Yeah, that's
yes,
also scary.
That's totally. Also, the pressure cookers.
I don't think this has ever happened before, but as soon as this happened, I knew it was a bad sign, is when Ron said, I'm going to make a croquette that's the size that looks like a baseball.
Okay, but to his that was problematic, but in his benefit, that's how he like pitched it, I guess, to Tom and everyone. He was like, now, I gave you a croquette the size of a baseball, and he delivered, you know?
Yeah, but anytime you say your food is supposed to represent, it's supposed to look like a non-food item, that's scary. But when people get too literal with their representations, it's usually going to be a bad sign. And also, a baseball is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big food item.
The only thing I want to eat baseball size is a peanut butter cup, and then probably not in soup.
Whoa! Oh.
I would say even more specifically, anytime that you take something that you know is supposed to be a certain size and make it bigger, not smaller, you're in trouble. Like, you know roughly what size a croquette should be. And then if you're like, I'm just going to make it the size of a baseball, though. Mm-mm. Don't do that. That's a terrible idea.
Yeah. Did you guys like seeing them cook in Fenway Park? Was that fun for you?
No.
No?
I just don't care that much about it. I'm sorry.
I was trying to think if, like, I would feel the same way they all felt, which was, like, totally ecstatic, if I got to be on the field at AT&T Park here in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think so. I love baseball and I love the Giants, but I'd just be like, this is cool, but it wouldn't be like a deep honor, you know?
No. I can chime in a little. I was allowed to eat fajitas on the field, actually, at AT&T Park, and it was pretty great. This happened. This honestly happened this year. It was a highlight, but I took pictures and I FaceTimed with you when I was there. Yeah. It was pretty good.
I mean, it's cool, but they were like crying.
I know.
Okay, yeah, fajitas were pretty good.
Also, I actually loves. I mean, Stacey's like prototypical Boston girl, like, and there's so much that she loves about Fenway Park.
Yeah, I think Fenway versus the stadium in San Francisco that's been around for 5 years, it's a little different.
15, but yes, that's fair.
Yeah, it's a little baby stadium.
We don't have any curses.
Yeah, no curses yet. And also, you know, I think the city is different in the way it interacts with it. And Fenway just has a mystique about it, I guess. And I mean, I think being on a field at a stadium would be super cool for most activities, but not so much for cooking. I feel like they were mostly just eating in the dirt, not food.
I just realized they missed a huge like licensing opportunity to like have this challenge be sponsored by the Jolly Green Giant.
Oh, that'd be pretty good. The Green Giant,
right? Yeah. There are only so many Green Giants in the world that we know of. It would have made so much sense to link them together.
That we know of.
It would have, yeah.
But, I mean, Alex, just getting back to what you were saying. I mean, the kitchen was cramped and terrible, so much so that they had to cook in three different shifts. Each one got an hour to cook. So each of those rounds took an hour for the judges just to sit and drink beer.
Oh, that's a good point.
Also, the food had to come out, like, basically, I think, around the entire outfield to get to them. So it was probably cold by the time it got to them. I just don't think it was a good dining experience.
Oh, yeah. Also, they said the last one said, like, thank you for, like, being here this morning.
Yeah.
That was the last one. It was still morning by the end of it.
It was 8 in the morning.
Yeah, that was... that was one of my favorite parts. Gregory said, what I've prepared for you this morning. And I love the idea of being in a world where you're like, all right, I'm going to go eat a very stretched out, fine dining meal in 12 courses, some of which are not good, that is served to me in a sports park at 8 o'clock in the morning with a sports writer and the most beautiful woman in the world. That is a crazy morning.
Dennis Eckersley is pretty, but I don't know, most beautiful.
I love Eck. I was so happy to see Dennis Eckersley
there.
He's
pretty great. I love his mustache for like 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got fun hair, and he was a closer, right? Which is like the craziest people in baseball.
Yeah.
I believe they show up every day, and they just got to eliminate dudes.
Yeah, you're like, I'm just gonna pitch my hardest for like 3 minutes, and then I'm done. Anyway, also doesn't know a lot about food, I don't think, and he was kind of fun. He was just like, yeah, I don't get it. It's too many pieces, and that's Katsuji's problem every time, so it makes sense.
Yeah, I wish they had taken one of the extra like croquettes and just like seen if they could like he could throw like a curveball with it.
Oh, I wish he had thrown a croquette. Yeah,
I feel like they were really not allowed to interact with the field at all.
Oh,
like that was like definitely part of the deal.
Track only.
Yeah. There was a lot of like, no, you stay away from that.
Also, the other thing about them saying like, by like, this is the oldest stadium in baseball. What that probably means is not handicap accessible and no bathrooms. So you don't get
that
accessible.
The kitchen is not for tall people.
Yeah, right. People were much shorter back then. So let's talk about the tops and bottoms really quick from the elimination. So we mentioned that Katie's popcorn mousse, she didn't sell it, but it was a big hit.
Accidental top.
Gregory almost a boring victory where he was like, we didn't see much of him, and it was just perfect, and they just gave it to him. But let's talk about the bottoms, I think, are even more exciting. Also, Melissa rounded out the top with another corn soup. Guys, how do you feel about Ron going home? My voice may have given away how I feel.
I like
that bummed you out.
Yeah, I don't like it whenever people cry, but he seemed to be generally okay with it by the end. Maybe I don't know.
He also didn't seem like he was shocked.
I think we know how Ron feels about going home, but I'm wondering what you guys think about Ron going home.
I was not surprised, and also I don't think he was shocked because he did say in the quickfire, like, "I'm just trying to hang on here."
Which is not what you're trying to say, I guess, three episodes in. It's not like what Blaze said.
Yeah. What do you think, Sarah?
Well, again, I think he's probably a good cook, but it just seems like a different level than a lot of the chefs there, and I don't think he's not that you have to be trained a certain way, but I don't think he's trained in the way that the top chefs of the group are, and so it's hard to compete with them.
Yeah, if you're the guy, I mean, this is like, oh, it was a Top Chef Just Desserts where it was like the one guy who cooked perfect cookies at his bakery but was not making stacked molded sugar. And so everyone loved him but knew he couldn't win. Ron likes to make big sloppy plates and that's fun. And he's like, I got to get used to making tiny portions.
the thing he said about portion size was just so sad.
Because he is a large man.
He's a large man. He's like, I got to work on my portion size.
It's not like you can learn to cook different styles while you're on the show. You don't have enough time, really.
Yeah, and just if you think the main issue is just you're making perfect food, but it's just too much of it, there are probably some other things you have to sort out as well.
Yeah, that's exactly. It's not like this would be perfect if there were 7 less bites or if it was golf ball sized.
Yeah. But what's interesting about you saying that, like, maybe Ron, his style of cooking isn't great for a competition show, Carrie Ann, her entire, like, background is competition. And that's what she,
that's where she comes from.
That's what her resume is. And yet she has been on the bottom, you know, a couple times now, or at least this time, and for trying to do too much for the same kinds of mistakes that some of these other people are making.
But they also dinged her for not recognizing that she messed up, I think. Mm-hmm. Like when she was like, yeah, I thought my braise was okay. And they were like, it super wasn't. Why are you saying that?
Yeah, bad judgment.
Yeah.
It was leading to one of those classic Top Chef phrases. Do you stand behind the braise?
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Is this how you like to braise your meat?
Yeah, I love that question. Is this how you normally like to prepare this?
Yeah, the answer to that question is always going to be no. I don't know how they haven't learned that by now.
Right. Well, it's just crazy. It's because it's like, hey, are you incompetent or are you stupid? Yeah. Like, did you know what was right and did the wrong way, or do you not know what's right?
Yeah, but they could say, no, I know it shouldn't be braised this way.
So why'd you send it out?
I made a mistake and I shouldn't have sent it out.
Right. I mean, I think the answer almost always is some version of like, well, not exactly, but I thought I could cover it. And that's also that's sort of incompetent and stupid answer to Tom. Like, you thought you could cover it. What do you think we are? We notice all details. We are Tom.
Oh, we are Tom is a really terrifying thing to say.
That'd be like a really scary Halloween costume. Is like a
multiple people.
Tom, or something.
Tom that has like Q and Padma and like Blaze as other heads.
Guys, next Halloween we should go as judges table.
I like that idea so much.
Must be linked in a table.
That's what I did that one year. Sarah, I was Padma. And he was Tom.
That's awesome.
Oh, that
you
is
did?
Good.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Did you have a bald thing?
I had a bald cap. I didn't. I still needed a bald cap. I think Tom cursed me.
Pictures didn't happen. What do you guys think? What do you guys think? Do you think it's a coincidence that both Katsuji and Carrie Ann were in the bottom with braised pork?
Like cursed against the letter K?
No.
Oh.
What do you mean by that? I mean, because she had short ribs and he had pork belly. Those are pretty different.
Are they? They both seem like they take longer, I guess.
Alex is like, meat.
Yeah.
Question mark? Meat. Was it bad? I couldn't tell you.
They both seem like long cooked meat. I don't know. All right, let's move on. What do you guys think? Let's talk about Katsuji.
Talk more about this.
Let's talk about how much you know about meat braising.
Long cooked meat, my band name.
I know a little bit about Katsuji, and I know that he went from the bottom to the top, back to the bottom. So whatever lesson he learned last week, he unlearned real fast. Do you guys think Katsuji is going to pull this out in the long run, or is he very short for this world?
Well, I mean, all he has to do is land on the bottom like the week before. All right, yeah, second to the bottom the week before the finale, and then he'll win, right?
Right,
he just goes back. He's like Drake, right? Like bottom.
Yes, started from the bottom, and now he's here.
Yeah, and now he's like reverse Drake, and then Drake again.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then the follow up to that song started on the top, and then I put too many ingredients in again.
Yeah. Who are you guys as front runners at this
also,
point?
What do you? Oh, this is interesting to me.
Who's still in this competition?
I mean, obviously, obviously Gregory is like just making it look easy.
But that's not always a good sign for the end. Like, no, I feel like people like Gregory, sometimes they do that for a while, and then, you know, you risk a Jen Carroll.
Or Stefan. Yeah. But like, I feel like Hung was, like, wire to wire, like, was leading, like, the beginning, middle, and end, and just, like, never really had any competition.
Yeah,
but it's been a long time since we've seen a Hung.
Yeah, it's been a number of years. I mean, we've got a few that are kind of consistently up there. We've got Gregory. I think both Portland chefs are pretty strong this year.
Yeah, Doug's done really well, although he was kind of quiet this week. And we had
Melissa. He was quiet last week, too, Doug. He wasn't even in it.
Yeah.
He just kept popping up and saying blue collar. That was about all he had to do.
Right. Blue collar, blue collar.
But if you're just wins and nothing else, that's usually good. Yeah, Maylin still looks really strong, even though she stumbled a tiny bit this week. And I think Melissa's going to come roaring out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to find out more about Rebecca.
Yeah, she could be good or bad. I couldn't tell you.
Or to see her go.
She even made neutral cake.
Yes, she did make neutral cake. That was such a funny... for my dish today, I've made forget-me cake.
Yeah, and that came right after she was like, I hate flying in the middle, so I've made you a neutral cake.
No,
well, she also said she's like an executive sous chef and a dessert chef?
Yeah,
like
the pastry chef.
The pastry chef.
So she described herself as a double threat of bland.
Oh, I do like actually double threat, too.
That's always something that makes me worry, is just whenever they have, like, a specialty.
Yeah.
And because, like, if it made it into the edit, it's usually because they fucked it up.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, this always goes great at my restaurant.
Let's jump ahead to the next segment really quick. I want to do a segment called Oh, Boston, You're My Home. How are you guys enjoying being in Boston? How do you like the city integration, better or worse than New Orleans?
I'm disappointed because not every single challenge is on a duck boat.
Huh. Do they have duck boats in Boston?
Yeah.
Duck tours?
Yeah, the duck tours. They took a duck tour. One
they have those in a lot of coastal cities.
Yeah, they have in Seattle.
We took the duck tour.
I took it in Boston, though. That was the first time
I saw it. That's the only duck tour that exists.
I definitely made a tea party joke last week, and then it was definitely a tea party quickfire this
year. Yeah, you nailed it on the tea party prediction.
Are we running out of Boston things we can think of?
More I love
beans,
that dirty water.
So they got to do
a
dirty
water. A massacre?
Baked beans.
Yeah, baked beans.
So got baked beans, massacre, and dirty water.
Dirty water? What?
Yeah. I love that dirty water. Oh, Boston, you're my home.
Yeah, especially since their mayor just, or their former, didn't that just happen?
What?
Yeah, he just
died, the former
right?
mayor, he just passed away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. After, like, he was mayor for, like, 21 years or something.
Yeah, but I just...
It wasn't the big dig in Boston?
Yeah.
Big dig was in
Maybe
Boston.
They'll have to... They'll have to cook
it's
something
the city
in the ground.
On the hill too, right?
What, Megan?
It's the city on the hill. The
I
no.
I think you're thinking of Greece.
No, I'm not. Someone Google it.
Yeah, apparently everybody, each of us knows one thing about Boston that no one else knows. That's kind of fun. But what do you guys think compared to like the feel of New Orleans and the way they felt like the city was participating in the show?
Oh, that's the issue, I think. Because like Emeril was like always a big part of it. We don't really have like a big style like Boston chef.
That's true.
Or we have no Sam Adams or whatnot. You know, like who's our guy?
Also, it could just be that New Orleans just has so much more richness and culture than Boston. I mean,
ooh,
I'm sure Bostonians would not like that.
Ooh.
But maybe.
Right. I mean, like I New Orleans has a vibrancy, and Boston has stuff we read about in history books.
Yeah,
and beans.
I would love a Bostonian. Go ahead, Sarah. Sorry.
I was just saying the way that New Orleans presents this culture is so much more accessible. I mean, because that's what you were saying. It's like there's music. There's like vibrancy, I guess. Whereas like Boston, maybe you have to live there for a while. You can't just see it by visiting like you can in New Orleans.
Well, there's like
a Bostonian version of Emeril who just shows up in the morning at the house and is like, "I made you baked beans." Would be really fun.
That would be awesome.
Wow, chef.
And everyone's
beans.
Like, "This is amazing.
This is the best beans I've ever had."
How do you like them apples?
I loved the New Orleans season. I thought it was one of the best like city integrations we've ever seen. But it's also possible New Orleans gave them more money than Boston did, and so Boston doesn't get as good of an ad.
But they've been integrating a lot of like, I mean, there have been a lot of Boston people. It's just that we don't know who they are, and they're not like famous blues musicians. It's like, oh, this guy has run this park for like 75 years and has a lot of John F. Kennedy related trivia, which is just like harder to like get into than like somebody who looks like a Muppet.
I'm less excited by like a sports writer for the Boston Globe than I was for Hip Tang.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy was great.
I think that's the thing.
He was so fun.
It's like, a lot of like hatchet-faced white guys is just not the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And the Boston's Finest was like very serious, and so it was less fun, even if it was important.
Yeah, it's a lot of emotion.
Let's jump into our mailbag then, I think up next. Jay pointed out by Facebook message, facebook.com/packyourmics, it's likely that this is about the baseball thing. He's like, I think it's likely that the people who would have been most impressed by them cooking at a baseball stadium might have been watching Game 7 of the World Series, which was on at the exact same time.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's an excellent point.
Totally good point. We watch these usually delayed by a day or two, and so I didn't realize that it was on at the same time, but that is that is true.
A bit of an oversight.
Well, I mean, I think true, baseball fans, I guess DVR their Top Chef is probably what it was.
that's what they say. It's an old Indian saying, I think. I do think that it's also, as far as oversights go, probably not their fault, and they might have been just disappointed that it went to Game 7 and that it was scheduled on a Wednesday. Probably couldn't control that, really, from Top Chef HQ.
I think likely everybody's TV ratings took a hit.
It's just bad luck when that happens. Eunice sent us a message that said, and I think this is pretty ripe for discussion, I'm over Richard Blaise as a judge already. Does he need to talk about how blank happened to him when he was on Top Chef and how the chef testants should avoid that? Loved him when he was on Top Chef. Don't love him as a judge. Thoughts?
Well,
Eunice, I am with you.
Was because it was about the salmon, right? And he was like, When I was on Top Chef, I really messed up the salmon, but you didn't. I thought that was like a nice thing to say.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like someone comes back from study abroad and then just everything relates back to like time in Venezuela. Yeah.
Well, when I was studying abroad,
I guess it just like
I really screwed up the salmon. Go ahead, Tanya.
Oh, I don't know. It just felt like. Yeah, it just felt unnecessary. And also, it was sort of one of those moments where it was like, oh, we didn't have time to add a clip of Richard messing up the salmon. So this is just him reminiscing in the sun.
That's true. Like, I was disappointed they didn't do a clip of that. I was also disappointed when they said that Chef Ming Ming Tsai when they said that he had thrown a first pitch and it had bounced, I was really upset that they didn't just immediately cut to footage of him throwing out the first pitch at a baseball game and having it like
some
the plate. Like
some tuba music with that. You know, it was like whoop whoop.
Yeah, would have been awesome. It's always a little douchey to say, well, when I was a contestant, but it also feels unavoidable if you actually were, because it's got to be weird for him.
And I also feel like maybe. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Maybe that's his role as this judge who used to be a contestant, is to be sort of the, I don't know,
empathetic.
I've been there.
Yeah.
I've been there guy. And
I guess I wonder is, like, was anyone clamoring for that? Like, did I'm not ever wondering, like, oh, what is it like for people who used to be on the show? How do they feel now that someone else is doing it? Like, I don't care.
So I feel like, Tanya, you might be agreeing with Eunice. You are also done with Richard Blaze as a judge.
I liked that they really trimmed down how much Richard we got in this episode. I felt like this was the right amount. And if he hadn't done that weird, like, I remember when thing, I wouldn't have minded him at all.
Yeah.
Like, he just didn't have a lot to say.
He just seemed like a normal expert judge, except for that one moment.
This is actually an interesting question, because it kind of goes back to the issue we had with Aaron. So it's like, if you were the producers, how would you make Blaze and Aaron likable?
I would have cut out that salmon thing because I really didn't like it, but I don't know what else they had in the footage to go over for that. I definitely, when he said the thing about salmon, I was like, yeah, nobody asked you about that, Richard. and it is a little annoying. But, I mean, I think, do you actually cut out all the times he's douchey if he's douchey? Is it your job to make him look great, or do you, like, if he's not great?
I like adding things instead. Like, so I just give them each like a banana suit, because I think it'd be really hard to, like, it's like, hey, test subjects don't think you're likable enough. Let's give you guys both banana suits.
And then actually,
I mean, they don't have shoulder mobility. It's just arms sticking out of a very thick costume.
I have to say, the easiest one change of all would be him just like taking off that baseball hat when he's like anywhere.
Oh, for Aaron. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, sure.
For Aaron. Yeah. That is rough stuff.
But these are things, both of these things you suggest, you guys, are hard to do in post. So.
Oh, no. You can do the hat swap.
Yeah.
He just has a different top kind head.
Of hat. Not great
just,
in post.
I would just heavily edit Blaze so that he just gives his opinion on the food in like 3 or 4 words, because that's really all he needs to do. He thinks he needs to go into some whole story, whether it's his, you know, his experience or
right.
not. But he doesn't. He just has to say, this is, you know, good because this, this, and this, or this was bad because it was too salty, or whatever it is. That's what we care
Ooh,
about.
You know what we could do? We could actually, like, overdub them. Like, sometimes, like, on Iron Chef, you know? They just have, like, the interpreter talking for them instead, and just have, like just the overdubbing.
We could have Richard to non-douche translations.
I'd be into like Robot Blaze, where it just like takes a bunch of the adjectives he used and is like smooth, bright, well cooked. That's all you get.
Thank you, Richbot.
I'm not quite ready to say that I'm over Blaze. I still think I'm holding out because I have high hopes for him. But I definitely think that there could be contestant related stories that are interesting. Like if he said to the people who braise, look, I've been there. Everybody wants to do their slow techniques that they do at home, and it's just not going to work, you know. And I tried the pressure cooker, also doesn't work. Here's what I recommend. No, Tanya?
No, I hate that, because that's like the thing that you want with Top Chef is like that risky thing that everyone thinks is going to fail, and then for whatever reason you find a way to nail it, or you find a way.
Well, that's
to
true, but I guess
it,
I just
like,
mean like an example. There are times where I can imagine, like when he said, which sounded crappy, but I think was actually very helpful, was when he said, "Remember, you're always cooking on Top Chef." If we interpret that generously as what he meant was, look, you're gonna think you're cooking for this festival and for the audiences, but please remember you're just cooking for the judges. Don't get caught up in, did we do a great job for the restaurant? Because it doesn't matter. It just matters how Tom feels. Like,
I think really that's useful a strong. Said that.
That's very generous, Alex.
Yeah. I was gonna say that is a really strong interpretation of a really dumb sentence.
I think it was
Richard
a dumb sentence,
said.
But I guess my point is that I think there are lessons he learned that he could share with the contestants that would be interesting. He just hasn't found them yet.
Yeah. And I don't want the contestants getting that kind of help. Like, I like every season being a batch of new people who haven't done this before learning how to do it. I don't need someone running in and being like, you know, you really can't poach salmon like that on this show.
I just,
like, nobody wants to hear that.
Well, but I just want everyone to have learned lessons from watching the show. I'm always shocked that they haven't watched the show better.
Well, what,
but that can be their bad.
Yeah. You're the TV expert.
Well, that's true.
But what I want to see more of is Tom walking in the kitchen halfway and going, oh, you sure that's a good idea?
Oh, that's true. We haven't had
that. That's great.
And everyone goes, oh my gosh, Tom might have, he poker faced me. Oh my gosh. Like, I got to scramble. And like,
well, I'm going to use that actually to get into our next segment, to our predictions. So are you going to say that that is happening, or you just hope that it happens?
I'm going to say that Tom is going to get more involved in two more episodes.
Okay, great.
I don't think it's going to be this one. I think Tom has been too busy. That's why he only kind of shows up for the end stuff.
Oh, interesting. Mm.
He's just a train right away in New York until he comes up to the for the eating part, but not for all the filming of the quickfire and all that.
Just to wrap up on the comments, if you have any other comments for us, facebook.com/packyourmics or @packyourmics on Twitter, also packyourmics.com. You can comment on the episodes as they come out, and you can find our email address there and send us email. All of that's great. We'd love to read your letters on the air. So more predictions. Chris thinks Tom gets more involved in 2 weeks when whatever else he's working on is over. Let's do catch up on last week predictions. We all predicted that Blondie would last longer than Aaron. Still up in the air on both, but both stumbled this week. So
yep,
feels like it still could go either way. Ezra nailed it that Ron is going to crash again this week. So good work on that.
I forgot I said that. Go
you
me.
Did. You did not nail it when you said that Doug and James were going to combine into one super chef in three-legged pants.
wait.
I didn't say there
was
in the air.
Yeah, well, that was still jury's out, right?
Settled yet. But it hasn't happened so far. Chris, you said that May was going to be in the bottom for iffy reasons, was what you said. And I think you were close.
She was near the bottom. She was almost bottom.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know about how iffy the reasons were. I don't know. But I think you're pretty close to that. I said that Melissa was going to jump to the bottom and Stacey to the top. Double whiff. Both of those. I'm not great at predicting things on this show, it turns out. So prediction questions for this week, you guys. Katsuji, he's had a bad week, a good week, a bad week. Does he continue the streak, or does he go for two in a row bad?
I say continue the streak.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's still
bounces back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's going to drink it, or reverse drink it.
No, now he's drinking it.
No, drink it.
He's going to drink it again.
This week.
I think he's going to be bad.
Tanya?
Ooh.
I would say that there has been an uptick in his confusion every time he's back, which feels like it doesn't bode well for him, like, coming back.
Yeah, he seemed real, he just really discombobulated when he was losing today.
I like him. I think he's one of the people that I want to do well more than most people. Like, I'm on his side. I don't know, like, if they can somehow get, like, Aaron, like, the Katsuji edit, like, I think I'd be on Aaron's side as well. I just don't know what that looked like.
Because when he did really well, he was on a team challenge, so he sort of had some other people to edit
him.
Oh,
that's true. That's right.
So I wonder if maybe next week, if it's a team challenge, I bet he's going to do really well. That's my prediction.
Interesting.
Well, and I think that's really insightful, Megan, because he had people that could kind of simplify him. Like, May was, like, definitely on him about being, being really good at this one thing, and then that was like the focus he needed.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's exactly. A great point. And probably because of even numbers, next week is going to be a team challenge again. So it sounds like you're on the you're on the Drake path. You think he's going to Drake it.
Yeah.
All right. So San Francisco and Megan are for draking it, Brooklyn. And I'm gonna side with Brooklyn that I think he's done. I think there's no way he comes back from this.
Start from the bottom, he's at the bottom.
Yeah, start from the bottom and got eliminated in episode four.
Specifically
got worse.
Specifically for Alex, I'm wondering, how do you feel about the return of the big eye? And do you think immunity is going to make more appearances soon, or do you think we're going to have a break from immunity?
I didn't even notice that it happened this week, and that's because it went to the best person, and then he won.
That's a nice way to deal with it.
I'm always fine with immunity when it's going to the best person and then he succeeds anyway, which is why I think immunity is such a bad part of this show, is because the only time we don't hate it is when we don't notice it, and that's not a good sign for a feature. So for me anytime it comes out, it's a cornucopia of animosity. I don't want to hear anything about it. I don't like it at all. So, but my prediction, it seems like they like it enough that it's going to stick around. So, I hate that.
So you think it'll be back next week?
I think it'll be back next week.
I was thinking they might blaze it and like have it come back every once in a while.
Yeah. Mm. I agree with that. I was just going to say, I think they're going to sprinkle it in there.
Just as long as they don't have it. What was the last episode that they had it in last season? It was like number
the semifinals.
Four yeah. or something stupid. Like, yeah. Four from the end.
Yeah, it stuck around way too long last time. I can't say enough bad about Immunity. If you notice it, it's because somebody did really badly in a big group challenge, and then I don't want them hanging around.
You know what was nice, though? Remind me of it. In the commercials, I think, there is a Stephanie Seymour was like in the commercial, like airing on, at the same time, just talking about like a dish that she liked.
What was the ad for?
Chase?
Oh.
Chase Sapphire, I think? But yeah, it was just like, hey, this is a dish I like in Boston. And it was just...
It's good to see her.
You can recover from even being screwed over by Immunity is what I was trying to say.
That's true.
You'll live to see another day.
Instead of getting Seymour, just give them a chef. Yeah, that's interesting. Instead of Immunity, just give them a commercial.
Yeah.
I like that versions of high stakes quickfires where there's no elimination, there's no immunity, you just get a pile of money. And then I love the money too, because then it's like a reason to hang around long, even if you know you're not going to win. Because like if you survive one day, you might get $10,000 or a cookbook from the chef. But I like when it's money, especially.
I agree.
Trips or other, like your dish goes on the Applebee's menu. I like that stuff.
If we're going to reform the quickfire,
uh-huh.
Okay, you've got to have some sort of prize that's not immunity for the win. Big prize, money or fame or whatever.
Or small advantage. I don't hate when it's a small advantage.
I don't like the advantage.
Oh, I love that because it's usually just enough rope for them to hang themselves.
Exactly right. Yeah. It's a small advantage that's secretly a disadvantage.
I have to disagree with
you. Yeah, but I love watching the unknowing fool. I love watching somebody who thinks they won something and then they're totally tanking it. But for Megan's quickfire, like, we don't do that because you don't want that. Okay,
no,
what else?
No, not in my version. And then for the elimination side of it, I think that we keep the current structure, but... we don't let them choose. So Tanya's suggestion of the knife block or the chef wheel.
Yeah.
I don't know
why you guys are even putting chef wheel as an option. Knife block. Obviously knife block. We've been complaining about there not being enough knife block, and then as soon as we have an option to put it in, you guys are like, or something else.
Yeah, but knife block should be for picking teams.
Wheel of other chefs is great, because you have to have a different wheel for every single one.
All right, fine. I enjoy that. I think that I agree with me. For the most part, I think that's a great way to do quick fires. I think the quick fires should be a chance where you can't lose anything, but you can win a lot, and so then you go really stretch yourself in 15 minutes. I think the quick fires, when they're not eliminations, are one of the most fun part of the show, because it's like you're going to get the hardest task, the silliest task, 15 minutes to catch and cook an octopus. Like, they just do these crazy things. In 15 minutes, and it's because, you know, go try it, because there's nothing to lose. And if you do great, you might
sometimes
win something.
Sometimes the octopus, she does
like
not bite,
when they have
you know?
To catch the food. That always seems unfair to me.
I agree with that.
Because if I somehow managed to, like, become a really good chef, which I don't know how I'd do, I'd still be really bad at other things. And so it's like, it's not fair to throw this other stuff in there, like, go catch an octopus. Like, there's no way I'm going to be good
at
that.
Wait, guys,
go shoot a gun.
Shoot a gun.
Yeah, shoot a gun.
Ship something out of a block of ice inside a ski gondola.
Yeah. Okay, wait, but guys, what if the next challenge is you have to catch clams, but you get to use an octopus as your buddy?
I like trying to do stuff while being tied to other stuff.
I like that stuff too. I like the quick fires that are like really bananas. I like when it's like no sharp things and they have to grate cheese on a shelf unit. I like the tied to each other. I like the quick fires where they have to yell at a member of their own family through a piece of
dark-colored glass. Abusive.
Don't bring their family into it. I feel like that's low.
I love the ridiculous quick fires, and I think if you add an elimination to it, you can't be as ridiculous, and so it feels like a double screwed when that happens. Any final predictions? Anything else you want to say, Ezra? What's your big prediction for next week?
So next time Blaze talks and gives some advice about what happened before, they're going to play some old timey music, like some country, like Turkey in the Straw or something like that. Just like do 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 do, and just like it's like, and goes to like kind of sepia toned and just like, you know, like back in my day.
I like the idea that they're going to go like silent movie style.
Yeah.
And it'll be like Tom, like rah 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 rah, and then they'll like show like, why didn't you put a burger with this?
Time was you could make tofu that tasted like things other than tofu.
I'm so bad at predictions, so from now on I'm just gonna predict the opposite of whatever you say, Ezra. I'm going to say no sepia-toned music or sepia-esque music when Richard talks. That's an easy win.
That's a bold prediction, Alex. You're really putting yourself out there.
Sarah, one more prediction for next week.
I have a prediction. I predict two things, that the poker face and the stew room will return. I don't know if we've talked about this, but they're
not
giving their criticism of the food right in front of the judges.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about it.
There's no secrets at the moment. And also, when they're judging top and bottom, hi Caleb. When they're judging top and bottom, everyone is standing there watching. There's no secrets about
they've already
that
decided.
Either.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's they're doing that just because there's so many chefs, and I think once they get down to 10 or so, we'll go back to the typical.
That's interesting. I don't miss the stew room at all, but I think other people might. So.
Well, we got some stew room this time. We had like an Anilon Trelato Wines like face off.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
And it was just long enough for Aaron to pick a fight with Katsuji.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. I didn't like Katsuji and Aaron fighting. Which actually reminds me, one last question for everybody. What happens if Aaron wins? Do we stop watching the show?
I've got one more in me after Aaron.
Oh, really?
Like I can go one more season where, like, the total monster wins.
I can't go.
Could do it to me three times, though.
Because I don't think Aaron is a monster on the scale of Elmi, frankly.
I think if we had a whole season, I think he could somehow turn it around and not be a complete douche.
Yeah, because he's already...
Yeah, but I don't think he will. I think he's draking it. He's just staying put. I started as a douche, and now I'm here. And it's the same place. And if we went Nick Aaron two seasons in a row, I would probably stop watching the show. I don't think I could handle that. I don't think he's going to win because he's not cooking great. But neither was Nick. Nick didn't do a single thing right until the end of the season. So who knows?
I will say it's interesting. I feel like the East Coast quotient of the show is like not necessarily like they're kind of hanging in the balance a little bit. I mean, Boston's doing pretty good, but like New York feels a little dicey.
That's
like
true.
The only New York chef we have left is like, who knows?
Whereas Portland's making a real strong showing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also,
yeah, totally.
fun fact I remember reading about before the show started, that of the two Portland chefs, and I can't remember which is which, one of them, this is the third time he applied to be on Top Chef, and the other one, they called him.
Ooh.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, isn't
that interesting?
Yeah.
Also, I'm going to try really hard to get Gregory on the show. I think we'd be able to do it.
Ooh.
Really?
Wow.
I bet we can. He's local. I'm pretty famous here. I bet we could get him on the show. I'll try to hook us up with a Gregory interview. Tanya and Chris in Brooklyn, last chance prediction or a final thought?
I'm going to go with Rebecca is going to go home.
Ooh, I like it. I like
Rebecca,
it so much.
Rebecca, we hardly knew ye.
Yeah, Rebecca, we didn't know you.
We literally did not know who you are. I love that prediction. I mentioned this last week and it did not come true, but I definitely think that people who have been in the middle for a while, they rarely jump to the top when they first show up. They're usually their first appearance is on the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree.
But then it's a real wake-up call, and they have to get their
act
together.
It could be a wake-up call. If they survive, they keep going, but they can get better, but it's usually
they either pull up their socks or they start missing their family.
Yep.
Like, those are the two.
Exactly. Yeah. Chris?
I'm going to predict that May is going to continue to favor the top knot, and as she is not rocking a headband game, she will not be in the top three next week.
Oh.
Headbandless note. No top. All right.
Yep.
Topless, headbandless. Megan?
Huh. What?
Final thought or a prediction?
I'm going to second Tanya's prediction about Rebecca going home.
Mm-hmm.
And then to add to that, I'm going to say that also in the bottom will be either Aaron or Carrie Ann.
Oh.
So one of the two, but not both.
Is going to have a really close call.
I love the idea of Carrie Ann, Aaron, and Katsuji all in the bottom next week. I just like letting it feed on itself. All that cornucopia of animosity just stays and gets stronger together.
You keep clearing goods out of that cornucopia and it keeps producing more.
Exactly. That's what's great about it.
The horn of plenty of jerks.
I have a long-term prediction, too.
Love
it. And that's that by the end of this season, we're going to have more positive feelings about Blaze as a judge. I think he needs some time to grow into the role.
I think he's sort of,
you know, he's sort of nervous right now. He's sort of not really sure how to approach it. Trying too hard. Yeah, I think he's going to relax a little bit, and we're going to start to like him as a judge.
I think that's totally true. I love that prediction, and I think that being a judge on this show is very difficult, and so it's taken. I mean, it took Padma and Tom a couple seasons to really get in the groove, and Padma and Tom have only gotten better at it. Mm-hmm. But Hugh's gotten matured in it. It's a tough role.
All it would take, literally, is just, like, at the end of an episode, like, it goes dark, you think it's over, and then it comes up on, like, grainy, like, webcam, and it's just Blaze, like, in a bathrobe in front of, like, a mirror being like, what have I become? and then I'm there, like, rest of the season. We're locked and loaded. That's all I need.
Be, like, a shorty kimono robe as well. And he's got, like, a headband on, getting his little, like, floopy hair up out of the way, and he's like, who am I anymore?
That's all it takes.
I'm going to leave it there. If that happens, you'll hear about it next week on Pack Your Mics. Thank you guys so much for listening. We're going to be back again next week, packyourmics.com. Send us all of your feedback. We'd love to hear about it. We'd love to read your letters on the air. Also, if you go to packyourmics.com/Amazon, when you buy stuff from Amazon, you can support our show. And Chris?
Yeah, the question I have, wait, before anything happens to Chris, which we won't know.
No idea what it's going to be.
Specifically, the question I want to ask people is, how would you make Blaze or Aaron more likable?
I would make a small modification from that. Like, you can answer for Ezra's question as an editor. I would also accept, if you were Blaze or Aaron, how would you dig yourself out of this hole?
Good.
I'm interested in that either way. I think that's totally interesting. I do think that there's a lot of room for Blaze to grow. But yeah, let's hear that. Facebook.com/packyourmics, @packyourmics on Twitter. Thanks for being here in Brooklyn, Chris and Tanya.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
And thanks for joining us, the Bay Area contingent, Ezra, Sarah, and Baby.
Yay.
Yay.
Bye, guys. Oh, you can't so just cute. Lean him towards the mic. He needs to actually.
I've got to squeeze him.
Yeah.
I thought you'd get a grunt in there or something.
And thanks for joining me in Portland, Megan.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm Alex. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
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 I almost made it out of this episode.